seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just
day.
A sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Just a beautiful day. Makes me want to get outside until I go outside, Ton. Boy, it is mighty nippy out there this morning.
It is. I left my house, and it was 27, which doesn't sound too bad, but when you get the humidity from the rain, it will cut right through you at 27 degrees. And
yeah.
Well, I was scraping my truck off this morning. The rain had frozen to the windshield, and that's always interesting too, but it was cold.
Well, good news is for those fair weather lovers like me, is the temperature is climbing up to like 50 degrees, 54 degrees on Monday. So, and today's not too bad, up to 47. So,
this beautiful weather for pruning and getting started in the yard, you know, if there's any leaves that fell over the winter, there's plenty that can be done outside.
Well, I still have perennials that I didn't cut back from fall, but it left some really dead leaves.
Yeah. Wednesday morning, I went outside and noticed that, I don't know how it happened, but there's weeds everywhere in my flower bed.
Yeah, how is that?
So I was weeding out there for like a half hour.
I know.
In the middle of February.
Like, I have this little spot by the driveway, and I'm like, where did these weeds come from? How is this even possible in freezing temperatures? Apparently, they find a way. Plant of the week is the viburnum. We wanted to talk about that this morning.
Viburnums are...
So at first you wanted to talk about one particular viburnum, and then you decided, hey, we should talk about...
We should.
Variety.
I took some time this morning when I came in and looked at several websites about viburnums to just do a quick checklist of how many can be purchased here locally. And I found 13 that you can find locally that are fairly common. And the reason the viburnums are usually grown is that they have pretty spring flowers. And the most common viburnum we grow is the snowball bush. And another name for it is European cranberry bush viburnum or European snowball bush, and that, you know, 8 out of 10 that are sold are going to be a snowball bush, but then you have a whole host of others that are very useful, that oftentimes have very beautiful spring flowers, but they also make great foliage plants. Many of them have really good fall color.
Okay, so other than the snowball bush, what kind of flowers do the others have?
They're usually white flowers. Some of them will have
a tinge
of pink to them. Mm-hmm. But there's several of them. There's one called Cayuga, Fragrant Viburnum, and then Pink Dawn and Birkwood that have very fragrant, and it's a good fragrant, flowers in the spring. And so you can plant them near a door or on a porch, you know, or a patio. And when you're outside, you know, those first days in the 70s that you can enjoy, these Birkwood Viburnums or the Pink Dawns will be blooming. And there's just this wonderful fragrance that comes off of them.
And is that with all of the viburnums?
No, a lot of them are not fragrant, but a few are. Others...
I'm trying to remember, does my snowball bush smell like it?
No, it won't.
I didn't think so.
But there's some that are, and then there's others that are evergreen. So, and they need to be protected. There's one called David Viburnum that's an evergreen shrub. And, you know, you go through this list... And another called Marie's Double File has very beautiful flowers. They look like hydrangea, a flat lace cap hydrangea. There's in this Double File, there's other varieties, one called Watanabe that only gets 5 feet tall, that blooms heavily in the spring, but then sporadically through the summer. So the viburnums are underused because most of them will tolerate alkaline soil here really quite well.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, a lot of them, the flowers are pretty. And are they going to be as pretty as Snowball? They won't. But there's other benefits, such as the fall foliage, or if they get some berries, the berries do stick to the bush. They'll offer blue or dark red berries that are then eaten by birds and wildlife in the winter. So they're a group of shrubs that, beyond Snowball bush, are just really not used as much as they could be in Utah.
Do they all get as big as a Snowball bush?
No.
My Snowball bush is
they're
probably
10 to 12 feet.
Yeah.
Unpruned.
10 feet high.
You know, a lot of them do. There's one called Leatherleaf Viburnum that's semi-evergreen that you see at apartment complexes quite a bit because it's so low maintenance. It will get 12 feet tall easily, but there's others like Watanabe, 3 or 4 feet. There's American cranberry bush viburnum or American snowball bush. There's varieties of it and European cranberry viburnum that stay 3 to 4 feet tall. So they're just dwarf. So there's all sorts of sizes out there. The cranberry bush viburnums, both American and European, are somewhat shade tolerant. And so you can grow them on the east side of your home if you need a shrub that will tolerate that. And they just have kind of a, when I say a relaxed feel, it's not that they look shabby at all. They mm-hmm. don't, but they just lend to a cottage garden feel, the cranberry bush viburnums. And so there's just so much diversity in
are
the
these
group.
Water-wise?
Moderately. They, once established with a couple of inches of mulch over the top, want to be watered about to a depth of a foot every couple of weeks.
You mentioned low care, so they don't need a lot of fertilization or
no,
anything.
No, pretty disease resistant. Every once in a while, you will see some iron chlorosis in them if they are planted in really alkaline soil or if they're overwatered. But a few of them, like the snowball bush, are susceptible to aphids. In fact, that's one of the downfalls of actual snowball, is the aphid problem with it. And so there's ways around that. You can do some dormant oil treatments, a systemic or something, but for the most part, they are not really susceptible to a lot of diseases
okay.
or pests.
I know we're going to get texts asking again what the fragrant ones were, so I'm going to have you repeat those.
Birkwood and Pink Dawn are the two most common, and there's some varieties of Birkwood out there, but then also Korean Spice, and one called Cayuga Fragrant Viburnum.
Okay. Because there's nothing like walking out onto the patio or onto your porch and just enjoying that wonderful fragrance in the spring.
Yeah. So if you've ever walked onto a patio in the South or in California and smelled gardenia or some of these really fragrant bushes, when these are in bloom, the fragrance is different, but still it has that quality to it that just a really pleasing scent.
Yeah, and these are some of the earliest bloomers. What is
they
their
are.
Bloom time?
Bloom time's right with Forsythia.
Okay. We're going to take a break. You can find out
I should
one more thing.
Clarify, okay. Some of them are right with Forsythia, so the
okay.
Birkwood and Pink Dawn, but others like Snowball Bush are going to be late April into mid-May. And so it varies, but they're usually spring. There's a few out there like Watanabe that will bloom sporadically through the summer.
All right. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can find out more about the viburnum on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. You can also text us your questions at 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you, taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can also text at 57500. First, texter Ton says they have some white mildew on their orchid leaves. What do they do?
Wash it off and see if that helps. You just get a mild soapy solution. Oftentimes, if I've not heard of orchids getting powdery mildew.
Me neither.
But if they do, sometimes a soapy solution will knock them out. It could also be hard water just from our alkaline water coming out of our taps. It could be dust. There are a lot of different things, but if there's a white powdery substance, I would just get a small container of just lukewarm Dawn, you know, just using Dawn dish soap or something similar, and see if you can wash it off.
Just wash it off.
Yes.
Okay. Next person says they have finished pruning their trees and grapes. What vegetable seeds should they be starting today?
Boy, let's see. It's late February, so it's getting about time. So any of the coal crops can be started. If you're going to transplant them outside, you can also start lettuce. You know, one that people think I'm silly sometimes, but I like mustard greens. And it's not that I enjoy eating them per se, but just to see people's reactions when you have a salad and they bite into one of those mustard green leaves.
Oh.
You get that kind of peppery bite mm-hmm. from them and it quickly goes away. But those can be started right now. But any of the coal crops and lettuce can be started.
It's like your human experience to see how people react
yeah.
to your mustard
greens. I used to work at Sam's Club and I was the hot dog stand boy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of my first college jobs, and I was growing three or four kinds of hot peppers in my garden. And so I grew some Thai dragon chilies.
Oh.
And, you know, at the hot dog stands, you have a container of pickled jalapenos. And so I decided I got the brine from the jalapenos, and I put my Thai dragons in there.
Uh-huh.
And I had a sign that said, warning, extremely hot. And, you know, use caution. And, oh, I had a good 4 or 5 hours of entertainment of people putting
until
that on there.
Until you were scolded.
Well, my manager found out. And he had been reviewing the footage from the security cameras. And he came out and he couldn't even keep from laughing. But he says, we're liable for that. You need to dump them.
Oh, my goodness.
But, man, you'd hear people, oh, my goodness, what is this? And people... I didn't, nobody asked for refunds.
Well, because you warned them.
Yes, but.
And nobody sued, thank goodness.
Yeah, thank goodness. And that was a huge liability. Fortunately, I was a naive college student and the manager found some humor in it, but that was something that I was not allowed to do again.
No, I'm sure not. Roger is on the line in Linton. Good morning, Roger. What is your question?
Thank you for taking my call. I have a 1 acre pasture behind my house that I bought a bag, like 40 pound bag of dry land pasture seed from IFA, and wondering what time this spring do I need to put that down so it'll germinate and take off?
Well, as soon as you can. It actually should have gone down last fall.
Okay.
In late October to mid-November, so that rain and snow would have worked it into the soil a bit. You're going to
okay.
want that seed covered with at least a quarter of an inch of soil, and that is kind of difficult to do with a landscape rake because what will happen is as you drag that rake, it exposes some seed and buries some seed too deeply, and you get patches of grass that germinate. And so I don't suppose you do, but do you know if you have access to a seed drill?
I don't.
Okay. I've heard that some rental companies will have a walk-behind seed drill. I heard rumors
okay.
Home Depot, I think in West Jordan, may have had one. You may call around because they're hard to find, but there are walk-behind seed drills that will just put
okay.
the seed into the soil for you at the right depth. But if you do need to seed that, the seed can go down, but it can't dry out. And so if you did put it down, I would actually get it down as soon as you can.
Okay, this is a great week to do it. It's going to be sunny and a little warmer, so.
All right, Roger, thanks so much for your call this morning.
Next, thank you.
You bet. Ton, next listener says, is it okay to start pruning their 3-year-old trees and bushes? They said that they heard last week that it's not a good time to prune during wet weather.
Oh, people have got the itch, and I understand
the
it.
Sun
I was,
comes, it's going to be a beautiful day today.
Yeah, and I was looking on Utah Gardening Experts in the posts awaiting approval.
Uh-huh.
A couple times, and about 80% of them were, can I prune my fruit trees? Can I prune my roses? And people have got the itch. And so apples and pears need to be pruned. And if you must, it looks like the weather's going to hold that you could prune your shrubs that are not spring bloomers. I would wait for mid-March, but if you have to, for whatever reason, you can do it. And then I would wait another couple of weeks on the stone fruits.
So what about apple? Somebody's asking about apple.
Get them done. It actually should have been started last week, and so it's a perfect time, so get those done.
They don't need to take any precautions.
No, they don't.
All right. Next person says, when can I start squash from seed, and where is a good place to get sweet meat seeds? What are sweet meat seeds?
Sweet meat's kind of squash. It's a heirloom variety that is just a sweet squash.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you get squash seeds? Is that what they're asking?
The sweet meat ones. Sweet they're meats? Wondering if there's a special
I would
place
just get
those.
Online and search variety because there are several companies that carry them, but they're most likely going to need to be ordered online. I don't know of one specifically off the top of my head, but I actually did an internet search on these 5 or 6 weeks ago, and there were 3 or 4 that you could order them from.
Right. Next, this is a Facebook question that we got. The person wants to know if the Gurney's Asparabest is suitable for growing in the Salt Lake Valley. I'm assuming that's asparagus, right?
Any asparagus is going to do fine here.
Okay, so they asked if not, what is a good option?
There are many that do well. I believe the old-fashioned variety is it Martha Washington, I believe, is the old-fashioned variety. And I'd actually
never grown asparagus.
Avoid that one. Because there are many varieties that are much more productive. So asparagus, you plant in early spring, and there you have to dig a trench and plant the root starts, and then they grow up, and you bury them in a couple of times. And you don't actually start harvesting a lot of asparagus until the third year.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they'll last and be really productive for 25 to 50 years, and a lot of the modern varieties don't go to seed. And what that means for you is more asparagus. And so you want to find more modern varieties. USU has a really useful asparagus fact sheet that they can look up. Dan Drost, the gentleman that wrote it, is actually a worldwide expert on asparagus.
Okay.
And he's written pretty much the Bible on it. He's a worldwide expert in onions and asparagus.
So Google USU and asparagus.
Yes, and look at his fact sheet, and it'll give you everything you need to know. But use the modern varieties because they're more productive than the old-fashioned ones.
Okay, we're going to take a break. Our next listener is saying, though, that they have their crocuses opening and the bees are enjoying them.
Nice.
So wonderful. Right. Thanks for your text. Take a break. The number to call is 801-575-8255. Text us 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, Maria Chalaos, Ton Bettis with you, taking your calls at 801-575-8255. Phone lines are open, and you can also text us your questions at 57500. Ton, our next listener is wondering if it's time to apply chelated iron to raspberries.
You can. The raspberries are still very dormant, and so if you had to, you could, but I would wait until mid to late March.
Okay.
Because even though the tops aren't growing by mid-March, the roots are.
Okay.
And they're uptaking a lot of nutrients.
Next listener says they have a 3-year-old sunburst honey locust that has the strangest shape, very tall and droopy center stem, and then very long, straggly branches. Any hints on how and when to prune it so it's a pretty shaped tree?
Some of the branches probably need to be headed back, and so we're going to use a pruning technique called heading cuts.
Oh.
And so they can look up pruning shade trees. USU has some useful fact sheets. But if the trunk is narrow and eventually won't support the canopy because of just the extent of the branches, I probably would do some heading cuts to see if I could get the tree back into proportion. And for branches that are still a little wispy, they can use bamboo stakes and just stake a branch using bamboo and use zip ties, not super tight, or the wire ties that you like on bread sacks.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually buy a roll of that at local garden centers and wire tie that so it straightens the branch. And then if they need to, they can also put stakes in the ground, almost like you would use for pouring cement, and pull branches in certain directions tied to the stakes. And so you can train the tree, but if it's young, the honey locusts do have sometimes a tendency to do that. And I would just go ahead and look up USU and tree pruning, and it'll bring up a few fact sheets.
Okay. Next listener has an English walnut tree that's about 40 years old. It's been a great producer, but some of the branches are dying, and they're wondering if those branches were pruned out, could they save the tree?
It depends. 3 years ago, we had one of these winters that we had a late September freeze down to, I think, 18 degrees, mm-hmm. and all the trees were still green. The walnuts really took it on the nose, and probably 50% of the walnuts in northern Utah from, you know, almost Cedar City north were really damaged to where the canopy of the tree was killed back to about the top 2/3 of the canopy was killed. And you would get sporadic growth, and then you had fairly healthy growth in the lower canopy. If that happened, the tree may eventually recover, but if it's a branch here and a branch there, there could be a disease in it called thousand cankers, and the trees don't recover from that. And so what I would do is look up USU and thousand cankers disease, look for bore holes, and you might need to cut off into some of the bark to see if it's black and there's galleries underneath and things. But if it is thousand cankers, unfortunately, I don't think the tree will not recover.
They're wondering if it does die, can they plant another tree in the same place?
Yeah, they can. I would not plant another walnut there. They could plant another one in the yard. If they can find one, Japanese walnut is really nice because they only get about 30 feet tall, so half the size of a regular walnut tree. But another species, they absolutely could.
Stephen Cottonwood Heights would like us to repeat some of the information we gave on the seed exchange. Do you remember the information on the seed exchange?
Oh, we'd have to dig it up off Facebook.
I'm going to look it up. So, Steve, okay. Hang on. We'll look that one up. Next person wants to know, what is a good quick-growing ground cover for an arid area that needs little water and can take dog and chicken traffic?
Oh, boy. Unfortunately, there's nothing that exists. You know, it just, you're looking at bark mulch, honestly, because no plants will tolerate constant dog traffic without water, especially. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, there are ground covers that would be fabulous, but there's just, with all those requirements, you're looking at either gravel or bark mulch.
Next listener wants to know if it's a good idea to clean your pruners before each use to prevent infection, and they want to know if alcohol would work to clean them.
Rubbing alcohol is fine. What I like to do is just get some rubbing alcohol, and I go to the dollar store, local grocery store, and get one of the spray bottles you would use for ironing, like you just spray the mist water on it. Mm-hmm. I'll put rubbing alcohol in there, and if I'm just doing general pruning, what I will do is use rubbing alcohol to sterilize the pruners after I'm done. But you need to be careful because even rubbing alcohol over time can be somewhat corrosive. And so Lysol is something they can use. But Mike actually teaches a lot of yard tool maintenance classes, Mike Karen. Mm-hmm. And one thing he likes to do is to get, what's the name of it? It's a citrus oil cleaner.
Oh.
And he'll wash, because it seems to break through you get the plant sap and things on there. And so rubbing alcohol will break through it too. But whenever you're done, they always get cleaned up. And you can use soapy water, but you need to thoroughly dry them so they don't rust. And another thing you can do is you actually don't want to use WD-40 to lubricate them, because it's actually not designed for that. It only lasts for a couple of weeks before it gets gummy, but a good penetrating oil, you know, a machine oil or another just lube that is longer lasting, you can do a light coat of oil to help them prevent them from rusting to keep them lubricated.
All right, Steve had asked us about the seed exchange, and our wonderful producer, Michelle, has gotten us the information. It's the Ogden Seed Exchange. The hours are 10 to 1 today, and it's happening at the Ogden Preparatory Academy. We're going to take a break, come back with more of your questions and calls. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us, 57500. Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse, spending your Saturday morning with Ton and me. Phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Ton, next person wants to know, why doesn't their wisteria bloom?
It just doesn't, and you'll get about 10% of them that don't, and you never know why.
What? So they need to start over with a different plant?
They may.
How long do you wait?
Some of them are in the ground. They'll bloom at the garden center. You bring them home, and they don't get a flower on them for 10 years, and you never know. You know, pruning them, you know, if you cut them down every year, that will prevent them from blooming. If you have them in too much shade, that could prevent them from blooming. But there's just a certain percentage that for some reason just don't bloom. And I want to go back to the Bible parable where there's the fig tree without fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus basically strikes it dead because it's unuseful for not producing fruit. And it's not that I want to do that to all the wisteria, but you unfruitful plant, how right. dare you not flower? And we planted you, and there are apple trees sometimes do that. There's just a few plants that every once in a while, it may be 15 years before they ever produce a blossom. And so you can, if it's just growing and you're leaving it alone, then, you know, if you know it didn't get hard frost, you know, if you're up in the Cache Valley, wisteria is a little marginal if it gets exposed to temperatures below about minus 10. But if you're leaving it alone and it's, we've had a moderate winter this year and it doesn't bloom, then it may be a number of years before it ever does.
Okay. Next listener says they've grown their tomatoes and peppers from seed indoors and they want to try growing Utah tall celery. How soon should they start their celery seed indoors?
So they should have been started 2 weeks ago.
So they better start it now.
Yes. Now, Utah actually was once upon a time a fairly major celery producer.
Hmm.
The colder mountain valleys like Cache Valley stayed cool enough in the summer for celery to thrive. And it's not an easy crop because it likes cooler temperatures, but it takes several months in the growing season to get it mature. And so people will grow it, but if you read some old-fashioned gardening magazines and catalogs and guides, it will say, do not grow celery if you're an inexperienced gardener because of how difficult it can be. And so if you want to try a row, that's great. And then the other reason they say not to do it, because once it's harvested, unless you can somehow preserve it in some stews or similarly, that you've got a couple of weeks before it really starts to go bad. And so it has to be used soon. And there might be some ways to store it longer for a few months. But it's one of those that we grew a lot of celery through the 40s, 50s, 60s before like Dole and other Green Giant and things started consolidating where they grow into fewer areas but bigger acreages. We used to grow quite a bit of it.
Interesting. Next listener says one of their trees had borers last year. Is it going to be able to be saved this year? And what should they use and when?
Just knowing that it had borers actually doesn't get us very far because okay. we need to know the tree and the species of borer, at least what the borers are doing. If it's a peach tree, treatments are one way. If it's an ash tree, if it's a maple. So unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to help much with just that information.
Okay, well, what if it is just a peach tree?
A greater peach tree borer, if the tree was relatively healthy still, it can be salvaged. Once it's damaged, the injury, the tree puts off a certain pheromone that attracts more peach tree borers to it. And so they're going to have to double up their efforts if that's what it is. But you have to spray a preventative pyrethroid, and there are several of them out there registered every 3 to 4 weeks on the trunk and especially around the base starting in June through September.
Okay, so they really need to get on it in June if it is a peach tree. All right. We do have Clint from the Utah Giant Pumpkin Growers who wants to come on the air and talk with us one day. And Clint, we'll have our producer get your number. And yeah, we'd love to talk about giant pumpkins. So many different varieties of pumpkins that you can actually plant here and have do well if you plant them early enough in the season.
Yeah, I think that it might have been Clint that several years ago, somebody made a small documentary on competition and rivalries between giant pumpkin growers. Because
there is such a thing?
There is.
And I mean, I know there are contests, but...
Yeah, the variety that most people are growing is called Dill's Atlantic Giant. But the seeds you buy from the garden center might get, you know, 200 or 300 pounds. But depending on how you back cross them, and there's something called the ploidy level, and there's a few different ways you can tweak these to get them even bigger. And if you're a giant pumpkin grower, you're not sharing seeds if you had a champion pumpkin.
Of course not.
Because of the work that goes into breeding that. And so, you know, just because you bought the seeds from the store, you're still probably not in the ball game for some of the more competitive growers.
Well, we'd love to hear from you, Clint. So we'll get back with you on that. How soon do you have to start pumpkin seeds to really be successful? I mean, I started mine really late and the vine was great and I got a few pumpkins, but they weren't quite ripe when I wanted them to be. So when's the best, how early can you start them?
Well, if you're growing jack-o'-lanterns, which is going to be totally different than giant pumpkins, but mm-hmm. jack-o'-lanterns, a lot of our commercial growers don't even start them until the 1st of June.
Okay.
Just because if you start them in mid-May, they do fine, but oftentimes those pumpkins will turn orange in early September. And if you pick them and put them in an area, you know, on some wood or just where they are dry and in the shade, they will cure and harden off and last, but they want to time them ripening in mid-September. And so around late May to early June is when I would put them in.
Okay. We need to take a break for the top of the hour news. Number for you to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. This morning, the plant of the week was the viburnum. You can check out more information on that on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. And we'll be back with more of your calls and questions here on KSL News Radio.